Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We're 2:05. Feeling alive.
2:05.
And now it's like, I know summer isn't officially till like June 21st, but I mean, this is summer. We're in June. It's hotter than it has any right to be outside. And it's funny how people, like Minnesotans, will like act as though climate change isn't a big deal in the winter when it kind of is a mild winter. But as soon as it gets hot, it's like, oh my God, climate change.
It affects both sides of the climate.
It affects all the climates. So you can't just praise it.
It could be. We should add an S like Walmart's. It affects all the climates.
All the climates. Walmart's. Yeah.
All the Walmart's. Morning, Gus. Good morning, Kathleen.
Good morning, everybody.
So I'm Daniel Walpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing.
And I'm Mark Van Stinoek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And so this week's topic was spurred on really by a couple things. So one was last week on one of the broadcasts, we get a comment that we occasionally get, which is somewhat along the lines of, well, you guys sure talk a lot, but what the hell are we supposed to do?
Yeah, so
the doing comment.
A valid question. In a world filled with noise where things get bad, is to assume that the problem is we need to do harder.
Right.
It's kind of awesome. And then
the other thing is, last week the city started trying to open up the corner, as those of us who live nearby call it, George Floyd Square. And it was, predictably somewhat of a total cluster. And so both of these things really connect very much to this whole question of, how do we understand how things get done in the world? And we often mention the word discernment. We've done a couple things on discernment. But really looking, when we talk about doing things, right, how do we do activism? How do we do good for the world? How do we don't really talk a whole lot about how we do things. It's just sort of like, give me the idea or give me the direction.
And then we'll do it.
And then we'll do it. And so, my guess is that many of you have been to some kind of a meeting. This happens in church circles all the time, but, other different activities. There'll be a meeting and it'll be like, okay, let's brainstorm all the good ideas about something. Mm-hmm. And so, people start naming off ideas and somebody's writing them on the whiteboard or the sticky pieces of paper and, putting them up around the room. And soon you've got, 40 good ideas, and they are all good ideas. Mm-hmm. And then everybody in the meeting.
Sometimes there's not all good ideas.
But, my experience is actually that in and of themselves, they usually are pretty decent ideas. And then everybody's just tired, right? Because then they look at this list of 40 things to do and everybody's like, shit, I don't have time to do any of these things.
And then if you use the word discernment in that process, it really ends up becoming about who's best able to convince everyone else of their idea or which ideas meet the lowest common denominator of what everyone's willing to put up with.
Right. Yeah.
And so neither of those are like any, what we want to call discernment, really. And there's all sorts of assumptions. We have so many assumptions baked in our society. Like if you complain about rich people, oftentimes somebody said, well, they had a really good idea and worked hard, as though success is based upon good ideas plus working hard equals success, which isn't how it works. Just like your decisions aren't driven by your intentions as much as you think. Like, our intentions don't drive most of our decisions.
Right. Which is why the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Well, and then the idea that there's even oneself is even... I was watching a documentary about, you know, the people who have their corpus callosum severed. So they have two different parts of the brain. And then the brain, they'll do two different things. Like, someone will reach, she'll reach for a blouse, but then her other part of her brain is reaching for something else. And so they're starting to realize, like, there's different wills within one person.
Yeah.
So the idea that somehow I have intentions, I come up with a good idea, and then I put it out there, get other people to agree to it, and we all work hard, and then it accomplishes it, is a way oversimplification of what happens anyways.
Yeah. Yeah, and so George Floyd Square, you know, has been closed off, quote unquote, right? So the streets have largely been closed. Now not 100% to vehicles, but largely. Mm-hmm. And it's been kind of this quasi-autonomous region. And all kinds of things have been going on there, many of them good, but many, many of them not good, right? And so there have been a lot of great events, a lot of great, you know, protests, activities, reflection time, you know, all kinds of really positive things, a lot of media attention there. And there have also been half a dozen people killed, over 1,000 shots fired in the last year, all kinds of, you know, very violent antisocial behavior happening there as well. And so, you know, you've got a lot of different ideas about what to do with the place. Right. And you have different affinity groups and groups of people that are organizing around different things. And you've got people who want the square closed the way it is forever. You've got people who think it should have never been closed to begin with, and every sort of permutation combination in between. And so when you have a situation like that, you know, how do we engage that, right? What do we start doing? And you know, the political process or the conventional decision-making process really is just about how can I get the most leverage for my ideas, right? So how can I force my decision to happen? And, you know, I do that in all kinds of different ways, you know, marshaling people, marshaling resources, contacting people with power. But the other way that I do, the other thing that I do, and we see a lot of this, is I talk about how other people's ideas suck. Mm-hmm. Right?
And I put other people down. And push down their
right.
ideas. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, so what ensues is just kind of a this battle, right, where everybody is doing those two things. And, you know, and eventually something happens. Right. And so, you know, when we think about doing things in the world, we often think, well, what are my ideas or the ideas of people that I respect, that I like? And so how can I just get behind doing stuff? But that's really not what discernment work is about at all.
A couple comments coming in from Ceres. A lot of time people don't think about habit building, what they need to experience if they need to discern something or stand by one's decision. That's right. Habits are a big piece of this, and we don't really, mm-hmm. I mean, most of the time you're not aware of your habits. So, mm-hmm. and that's hard for people to grapple with. So that when you say that someone, like even using the big one, like calling someone a racist, which people freak out about, even though like we all have internalized racist habits at some level, you know, things that are detrimental and lift up white supremacy in some way because we're conditioned that way. If you call that out, then people automatically assume that you're attacking their morality, their conscious decision-making and their intentions. And it shows how messed up people are about this stuff. And a lot don't pay attention to how collective and personal energies move around and how to interact. Our culture is not set up to have goals, practice, formation, process, to be in a good dance and rhythm together. Yeah, we don't. Process is kind of key here, and that's part of what we want to talk about. Like, it's not the idea, and you know, I grappled with this a lot, especially in leftist spaces, is this idea that there's this assumption that you come up with the best blueprint, which is a constellation of ideas that work together, and you put it out there, and they're like, let's do that, let's work towards that, and you come up with logical steps, and you make everyone go through that. And there's no process or really discussion when you do that. As though process is just kind of this necessary evil to get to the perfect ideal.
Right. Which we predetermined to begin with. And so, so in this class that I was just teaching recently on Paul, you know, there were a number of times when we were talking about discernment, we're talking about what both Paul and Jesus look at, which is this idea of fruits of something. Like, so if you want to tell what spirit is behind something, you know, you look at the fruit that it produces. And, you know, this comes from really from ancient biology, because, you know, back in the old days, they didn't know anything about DNA and stuff like that. And so all life is animated by spirits. And there's a different spirit for each kind of creature. And so if you're an apple tree, you're animated by an apple spirit. And that's why the tree makes apples. And so if you want to know what kind of, you know, if you see a bunch of trees like in the winter and they're all bare and you don't know anything about trees and you say, well, what are these? The best way to find out is to wait around till they have fruit. And then you know for sure, right? So, and so for people or for human situations, the idea is, all right, well, fruits are behaviors, feelings, attitudes, general sense of what's going on individually and in community. So you look at the fruits and you can tell what kind of spirit is animating that. You know, and on the face of it, this sounds really nice and simple, but there's a really big trick to it. And this is where it connects to this other decision-making process. And the trick is that you have to be willing to actually let go of your ideas at the beginning of the process. That's the hard thing. Because the people who've been part of the discernment tradition have said, well, look, the problem is that we as humans are capable of a lot of self-deception. Like, we don't really know what is of God, what is, you know, the best decision, however you want to frame that that term. And so the only way we find out is by being willing to give up what we think is necessarily the right idea. Because if we do a discernment process and we do it, you know, Mark, the way you outlined, which is we start with an idea and we try to convince everybody it's a good idea and then we do it. Well, what if our starting point is off base? Right? We'll never know that. And so we can only really look at the fruits of things clearly if we're willing to give up our ideas to begin with.
You might even have the like a great idea, but there might be there might be like an idea is also not one thing. So like there might be, you know, it's a cluster. So you might find out that you're mostly there, but there was some key piece that was really toxic in there that needed to be examined. But if you were locked in, I see this a lot with with leftists, surprise, surprise, when it comes to all kinds of ideas, like the idea of ownership. Like, well, unless you could, you know, people have this very legalistic way of doing things that do not allow for any nuance or subtlety or the recognition that, well, this is why a lot of leftists who are more traditional in their emphasis on material, like the idea of whether you're poor or not, kind of being the center. Once you start bringing intersectionality, a lot of leftists start freaking out because it does that. It complexifies it and starts saying, well, wait a second. You can't just have this blueprint and force it on people. You can't be all Lenin about it. Sorry, Marxist Leninist. So. You can't say, well, this is what Marx is going for, so let's force our way to that. And if people die on the way, it's the necessary evil.
Right. Right. And what that points out, which again, we're often loath to admit, right, is that a, quote, good idea is just simply floating without context. Right. So in the discernment tradition, what they talk about is that discernment is about deciding between the good. It's not about deciding between good and bad. And so that, you know, if you think back to the beginning where I talked about this list of 40 good ideas, the question then becomes, well, which good idea is actually good for this situation that we are in right now? And that's a very different question. Right. So this idea hovering, you know, in outer space as a good independent idea, when it intersects with the current place and time and group of people and situation, it may actually not be that good of an idea. Right. And so, but when we're holding on to my good idea for all space and time, I have no way of really being open to a whole slew of other voices, right? But the problem with the political process is as soon as you admit, oh, somebody else may have, you know, a good idea or the right idea for this place and time, well, now you start losing political traction.
That's right.
And so people don't do that.
It's not, because in the political process, there's two goals together. One is the idea, and then one is continuing to grow your own power because right. you have other things you want to do.
Yeah.
Which makes sense. I mean, let's be honest. Like, of course, if I represent a group of people that feels, particularly if they're disenfranchised or marginalized, I want to hold power for my group. That's totally reasonable.
Yeah. So I'm feeling very, like, things are very quiet.
I'm feeling lonely.
We're feeling alone. I don't know. Maybe part of summer is that transmission is transitioning to non-existence.
Maybe we're transitioning to. We're like the opposite of the cicadas. We're going under.
Right. We're going back under the cicadas. We could have a whole thing on cicadas, on eating cicadas and.
Well, Brood X doesn't really reach this far north, which is, so I'm seeing pictures of Sarah eating cicada tacos. And I'm like, I'm not really jealous, but I'm curious. I guess I'd say that. No, I would eat them.
Definitely not jealous.
I'd rather grind them up because it's more the shape of the bug that bothers me more than the idea of eating it.
Yeah.
If you could unwrap it somehow. Anyways, good comments. I knew if we started talking about eating insects, people would be like, stop. Please, let's talk about these other things. Gus writes, this sounds so much like the work of Miles Horton and Paulo Freire. We make the road by walking, creating a habit of action, reflection, and vision. That's the idea. Like, good call. Like, Freire, I was just reading this, like, the other day. One of his key ideas is this idea of dialogue. And what he means by that is instead of a teacher giving content and asking students to figure out the implications for that content in their life, which is what we normally think of as the best way of educating, the teacher presents the problem. And then to students, by engaging and problematizing things through just dialogue, they realize what their action is and they reflect on it. So the assumption is even in the actions, it's not putting into practice the best idea. It's acting and returning, so it's a continual discernment process.
Yeah, and then the other big important question in all of this it always is who is the we who's doing the process, right? So, for example, again, looking at George Floyd Square, you have a few folks that are camped out there that are claiming to speak for the community. They're always using that word. We're the community. And we are speaking for Black people. Okay, so I've got four elderly Black neighbors that live just as close to George Floyd Square as the people who are acting for the community. I've talked to all of them about what's going on, and none of them like it. Right? So, are they part of the community? Are they, it's sort of like Jesus's question, who is my neighbor? Right? Who is part of the discernment process? And in every grouping, there are always people who are in and who are out of the process. And the people who are out, we're not hearing their voices, right? We're not validating them as humans. We're not validating their opinions. We're not validating their ideas. And so we may actually be completely missing what thing is going to bring about the best fruit because we're not paying attention to those folks. And again, what you see happen all the time is that when somebody like that pops up that says, "Oh, well, I think this is a bad idea," then there's immediately all kinds of commentary about what's wrong with those people, right? So that we invalidate them. And again, and this is why discernment is very, the longer I do this work, the more I feel like discernment is unbelievably radical. Because it's also very scary. It's like, I mean, letting go of my ideas is scary, right? Because, I mean, each one of us thinks that our ideas are good ideas. Right? So to let go of that and to say, wow, maybe I have no idea. Maybe this other person that I really disagree with has the best idea. Right? That's very, it provokes this experience of groundlessness.
Well, and part of the problem, and the reason why people don't like discernment, is it opens things up. You don't know where it'll go. And it could make things more complicated. So, homeless encampments, there's always like neighborhoods that want to meet as neighbors to figure out what to do with them. And the them is never included because they don't live here. And I'm like, of course they don't live there. They're homeless. But they're living there now, but they don't, doesn't count because of your ideas of property rights. So you start asking these questions like, wait, we have to think about property in order to start talking about what to do with homeless people? And it complicates things. Well, and it needs to be complicated because what you're doing by trying to get rid of them is just simplifying a complex set of issues. And so instead of bearing fruit, you're just getting rid of the problem. A lot of decisions kind of fall into that. Like, how do I deal with this without having to deal with it? CK, it's a good question. Doesn't intention play a part? One can say yes to a good idea, but if one's intention is not there, then what?
Yeah, I mean, intentions play a part. But, as Mark was saying earlier, there's all sorts of stuff bouncing around in our mind,
We don't
right?
have
And
one
so,
intention. It's hardly
right,
any.
we don't have one intention. And often the most prominent, not in terms of consciousness, but in terms of power, the most prominent intention is simply self-preservation. Right? And so that we may think, oh, I'm doing this because I intend this, that, or the other thing. But deeply embedded in all of us is the intention to stay stay alive and to support myself. And so, yeah, intentions play a part, but we have to understand what our intentions are. And we have many of them. And most of them we're not aware of. right? I mean, that's the thing. Most of them, you know, most of what is going on in our mind, meaning our entire psychophysical being, we are simply unaware of.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's why when we think, oh, I'm just putting forward X for Y reason, like, no, not really.
Well, I'm this NDC, scale this up. Like, so systems are complex, but we're also complex systems. So we don't even have, it's amazing. So, you know, Jung will talk about the, you know, how you project your shadow onto people, right? And so like all the stuff that you don't know about yourself, which is a lot, most of what we know about ourselves is like still a small percentage overall. So we project crap everywhere and then react to people. And so you start noticing like, oh, wait, I'm always mean to like guys that act like they know it all. Maybe it's because I'm a know-it-all. Like, you know, you start realizing that sort of thing. You start realizing the way I interact with the world has a lot more to do with what's inside here than really a valid assessment of what's out there. Now you multiply that times 1,000 in like a small town trying to make decisions about things. It just really gets complicated. And so you have to, one of the things you have to let go of, and this is, again, hard for some of us who are justice-minded, you have to let go of the possibility, like maybe there isn't a pure and right decision in every given situation, which drives evangelicals nuts. When you start talking about discernment, they freak out because they want an authoritarian, pure thing that they can do in every moment.
Don't you believe in objective reality?
God's will is the authoritative thing to do that's right now. Well, what if it's more complicated than that, and it's more about process and direction and growth? And people don't like that. Going back to Sirius writes, this issue of decontextualized ideas is why other spiritual traditions had the wisdom of siding with embodied spiritual practice, animism, formation, but many modern churches won't face this reality.
Yeah. Yeah, which, you know, which is why, for example, most, you know, most early spiritualities, I don't want to use the word indigenous because it's got all kinds of connotations, but let's just say early time-wise. I mean, if you look at the spiritualities 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago, it's pretty much all conveyed in stories. It's not conveyed in ideas, right? And that's because a story is an embodied wisdom. And the notion of some sort of totally separate idea that didn't reside in a story coming out of the particular context, which included all of the rest of nature and everything else going on, you know, that's a very modern concept, this disembodied idea concept. Ancient peoples would not have understood that at all. It would have made no sense to them.
Yeah, and this is this idea of story. It's important, again, like the framework. Are good ideas and discernment primarily about coming up with, like, is it coming up with the best idea to enact because it'll reach us towards the more ideal kind of place? That's kind of tends to be a very Western way of thinking. Or is it we're entering this process so we can start changing the way we relate with one another? Change the way we relate to the land and put things back in a better context and harmony. Like, and again, that's a very, those can sometimes look the same, but it can be very different. More comments coming in. Thank you for the comments.
Yes. Thank you for the nice positive comments.
Karen writes, oh no, I'm deeply listening and feeling and thinking about discernment now. You too present spiritual nuance. That means I need to pay attention and reflect. I'm not listening to respond. LOL. So we're overwhelming people. Kathleen writes, I'm listening. Not sure I have anything to contribute to this discussion. That's fine.
Thank you. Yeah. No, we appreciate folks chiming in, saying they're there. Mm-hmm. All right. Neil has all kinds of good questions. We're at about time. So these will be things we can deal with, too, as the week goes on.
Yeah. Neil writes, I'm making an assumption or maybe just projecting. But seeing the complexities, I get completely overwhelmed to the point of paralysis, for sure. I understand that. Mm-hmm. Is it just a matter of building a habit of acting anyway? How do you overcome the overwhelm?
Yeah. So that, I mean, that, those are really great questions. And one of the things that when people hear about discernment, spiritual practice, things like that, one of the things they immediately think of is, oh, we'll get nothing done, right? Either because of overwhelm or because it takes too much time or all of that. And so, but the thing is that the communities that cultivate the practice of a life of discernment, right? And discernment is an ongoing life habit. We can maybe say more about that during the week. It's not just a tool for decision-making. You begin to just get used to this very different way of doing things. And what paradoxically, what starts to happen is that in many ways, decision-making often becomes easier rather than harder. Because so much of what makes decision-making hard is all of the conflict around ideas. And if everybody starts with the proposition of, I'm willing to let go of my idea, that suddenly creates a much more peaceful space. And it allows a lot of good energy to begin to move. But it is a practice, and it's not something that one can just do sort of easily and automatically. All right, a couple more comments, then we're going to close out.
We're going to blaze through these. Gus writes, I'm on the board of directors of a radical anti-homelessness org where anytime there is a committee, I'm on a hiring committee, is formed. The goal is to have diversity that represents all parts of the organization, including unhoused people. It makes it so hard because you're inviting people who are trying desperately to meet basic needs to create space for something that's a lot more abstract.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we're not trying to sugarcoat this by saying that this is like a necessarily easy. And those, and to me, that sort of urgency of need is like a real thing to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm.
And I also want to stress out, and this is just Charles has a couple of things. He says the authoritative spirituality is pushed by the corporate agenda, possibly through Freemasons and the family. Dialogue with others is important, but those with a corporate interest will try to squash discernment to keep secrets. Not sure I'm tracking with all that, but I do know that oftentimes groups will kind of create a space where they're going to have stakeholders discuss things. And it's really just a way to kind of actually ultimately stifle it. Right. We see this all the time.
It's highly predetermined.
It's highly predetermined. And the one who are setting the stage for the discussion are the ones who are making the decisions. So you're just a sounding board.
Yeah.
There's a lot. We don't want to make this seem like a happy, let's hold hands and everything will work out kind of process. CK writes, it seems that in this day and age, the idea of making a free will decision is less and less. I think that's true. There's a lot of determinism baked in. Angelique writes, dialogue with others is important, but we often don't do it. If we do it, there's no guarantee we ground it with our own inner dialogues, with the power holder in us and the marginalized parts of us. Good point.
Yes, absolutely.
Cheryl writes, yeah, overwhelmed. What about seeding good ideas? One tool for decision making is sociocracy. Know it? I don't know what sociocracy is.
I haven't heard that one. And then I think Lisa's comment is a great way to end.
Well, Laurel got one in there too. Lisa writes, crap, need to get back to this. Hello, all.
Hey,
Laurel says, as well as the willingness to let go of our own ideas from folks used to having power is also cultivating willingness and skills and confidence to share ideas in those furthest from power. Yes. Lots of good stuff coming up here, which we'll hopefully continue with next time.
Which we'll get back to on Wednesday. All right. Mm-hmm. Great to be back. Good to hear from you all. And stay cool.
Stay cool, everybody.